This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. In each episode, we bring you information, insights, and ideas from some of the industry's top thought leaders. Connect with us to help pick the topic and guide the show.
This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. I'm your host, Jamie Wood. Our topic today, power scripts. Now, have you ever noticed how some people who work in media sales just seem to have a way with words, right? And I don't mean they're slick salespeople or they have the gift of the gab. Quite the contrary, right? They're the people who just speak authentically, speak in their own voice, but they seem to have a way of really like articulating ideas, negotiating through issues, resolving conflict in a manner that just feels really effortless for them. Like, this isn't actually a natural talent, right? In many cases, a lot of this comes down to that person having a really extensive repertoire of what I kind of call power scripts, right? These are the sentences, the phrases, the words, the turn of phrase, the just the general ways of speaking, the cadence. It's all been crafted. It's all been field tested. It's all been refined over many years of working in the profession. And my plan today is a bit different. It's to kind of share some of the listener questions that I've received, mostly through LinkedIn, but all of which have a similar theme to them, right? They're asking for some advice on how to effectively communicate around an issue. And, you know, that's everything from in a client sales context, maybe dealing internally like with your manager, or working in maybe a collaborative situation where some friction's arising with an internal department. So without any further delay, we're going to jump into it now.
The first five.
Okay, let me start by saying this. I am by no means an expert here, right? What I do have a bit of experience with, though, is speaking in big public settings and speaking to large groups of people. All through my high school years, I actually competed in inter-school interstate debating. And debating's an interesting one, right? A lot of the motivation for people who go into debating is a lot of the time it's people who aspire to become lawyers, people who aspire to become politicians, people who are just generally quite argumentative people. For me, the appeal was very different. It was really about developing a skill set of being quicker on my feet. Because unlike public speaking, right, and I'm not for a moment suggesting it is superior to public speaking, but unlike public speaking competitions, you know, that are focused on crafting this beautiful 10, 15 minute speech and then kind of practicing it and just refining and then delivering it to perfection, debating's kind of the opposite of that. It's a bit scrappier. It really requires you to formulate a lot of ideas on the fly in real time. It requires you to kind of change your arguments, you know, in the actual competition. And in the case of the third speaker in debating, which is what I used to be, you actually can't prepare anything in advance. You know, the rules are that you actually just have to get up and basically rebut the other side's arguments for anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes, which can, I tell you, feel like an eternity when you're getting up there, basically having to deliver something on the fly. Here's why I'm sharing that relevant background, though, right? And it isn't to brag, because I certainly didn't get a lot of brownie points or credit in high school from anyone for being a great inter-school debater. But here's why I wanted to share that, because my belief is that scripts actually really suck, okay? People know when a salesperson is using a script. People know when they're getting an off-the-shelf kind of pitch, or even worse, when they're getting like an off-the-shelf rebuttal. Infuriating. Can't stand it. And in my opinion, the scripts still have a place, okay? I'm not suggesting for a moment that you abandon all scripts and just try to wing it. But what differentiates a great sales professional is their ability to take the raw elements of a script, right? To take the persuasive arguments, but to then adapt that messaging in real time to that particular situation while also delivering it in their own authentic voice, okay? And what I hope to do today is demonstrate this kind of technique. This may be a complete bomb because I haven't actually prepared any responses to this. But what I have is my producer, Joe, has recorded a bunch of the listener questions we had submitted. And I'm just going to react to them in real time. And then just drawing upon some of my experience, try to kind of show how I would, in a very real scenario, respond to these dynamics. So without any further delay, let's do it.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey Jamie, I'm in a new role that's very phone-based. I come from a software sales background where we used to do a lot more outreach via LinkedIn, email, and events. Got any tips for how to secure client uncover meetings via cold calls?
Yeah, look, the first thing I'd say is I'm really surprised by how few media sales professionals, particularly in direct sales, utilize cold calling as part of their prospecting these days. It went from being not even the predominant, like it went from being the only way to book an uncovery meeting with a new client, really, to now being something that I'm really surprised when I come by a media sales professional who is a really diligent cold caller. Here are some of the scripts that I think work really well. And let's suppose for a moment that you work for a radio business. Here's how I would typically set up a script. Let's say I get the decision maker on the phone. My pitch would go something like this. You know, "Hi, Robert. My name's Jamie. I'm calling from X radio station. How are you doing today? Look, this is a cold call, or I'm calling you a bit out of the blue here. I just want to take 30 seconds to let you know why I'm calling, and then I was hoping you could let me know if it's worth us continuing to chat. Reason I'm calling, I represent a radio brand that currently reaches X amount of listeners, and specifically within that, we found that there's a number of those listeners who are planning to do some extensive home renovations. So what I'm doing is actually just calling around a bunch of different clients who work in that home renovation space. Just want to come out and meet you, have a bit of a conversation around your business, your objectives, and also maybe see if there's some ideas that I could put to you around how we could promote your brand on air." Okay, now that's not very polished, right? But that's kind of the way that I would do a cold call. It's me just talking. You can hear that I'm sort of stumbling a bit over my words. You can hear that I haven't really formulated it. But there's a level of kind of like forward thrust that you want to go into a cold call with, and a lot of energy. And a lot of the time, you know, what I find can really sort of derail people is people can go into cold calls with, you know, almost like they rush or they try to be really friendly. I think just get to the point. Don't be afraid to disclose it's a cold call. Another script that I really like that I've been using a lot lately is something to the effect of like the really assumptive cold call. So it could go something like, you know, if in that example, we were calling a guy called Robert who owns a roofing business. Let's say I call him again, but here might be the script. "Hey, Robert, how you doing? It's Jamie Wood calling. Hey, you got a quick second? Mate, reason for my call, I saw you guys online the other day. From what I can see, you guys do roofing installations. You do a little bit of work in that residential space. Is that right? Yeah, great. Hey, listen, I want to come and see you next week. I work for this radio station. I'm just kind of reaching out to a bunch of different businesses who work in that sort of home renovation space. Mate, we've got a massive audience, all primed at the moment to do particularly during COVID, to do some major renovations on their house. We've got a bunch of partners that we're working with. We don't currently have someone in your space. So, mate, I'm going to be actually over your way on Wednesday. Are you free around 12 o'clock if I pop in? Okay, another really casual one, but you can see there, what's the answer going to be to that, right? I've kind of given a pitch. I haven't really disclosed where I'm from initially. I've kind of led more into confirming some details. So, you know, again, that's my style. That's how I typically book calls. One of the ones with cold calling that I find is also really beneficial is keep it really slow, right? It might feel actually uncomfortably slow, but something that can really work quite well is also going in. And if it feels slow to you, you'll find that it actually feels natural to them. We do have a tendency to rush. So something that could be useful in this case with our mate Robert would be something like, "Hey, Robert. Hey, oh, actually, sorry. Have I got the right person? I'm looking to speak to Robert, the owner of Robert's Roofing. Is that you? Oh, okay, great. Hey, look, sorry, I apologize. I was going to give you a call the other week, but I actually didn't have an opportunity to. Reason I'm calling, right? So I'll stop there. Okay. That's a bit awkward, right? But believe it or not, like that kind of opening to a cold call, if nothing else, it's authentic, it's natural, right? It's just having, the confidence to go in and trial some different approaches, right? A lot of it's going to be required. It's going to require you to actually take some data in real time based on how that person answers the call. So my general advice, keep it really casual, be direct, don't be afraid to be unpolished. A lot of prospecting is about just sheer brute force. So, you know, I've always said, just pick up the phone and dial away and have a couple of awkward calls and refine in real time. Best of luck with that one.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey, Jamie, I sell digital media direct to SMEs. I'm finding that a lot of the businesses I call on are being heavily targeted by other media publishers, and the prospects are quite agitated when I call them asking for a meeting. Any tips for how I can secure the meeting when the client is already pushing back?
Yeah, look, this one isn't uncommon. You know, you might have every intention of delivering a great pitch, and the first thing you get from the client is, you're the third person that's called me today. I've already heard from you. I keep getting harassed by you guys, right? It's not a great way to start a conversation. I have to say, in my experience, humor and flattery are your two best friends here, right? So let's say the client was to say something like, you know, this is the fourth call I've had from salespeople today. Is that right? Oh, well, I can imagine how frustrating that would be. If nothing else, clearly you're doing something right that everybody wants to work with you. Can I just tell you the reason why I called specifically, right? And I'll give me 30 seconds. If it doesn't make sense for us to keep talking, I'll never call you again. I'll take you out of our database. Is that fair? Right? So something like that can be a really powerful tool in just reframing the conversation and taking control back. You're asking for 30 seconds. You're kind of softening it a bit. And really, what are they going to say? If they say no, the reality is they're probably not a great prospect, okay? So then move on. One of the other things that I think could be really handy is maybe incorporate it into your script, right? So if you were to call that person and ask to speak to them, it might be something to the effect of like, hi, is this Robert speaking? Yes, it is. Hi, Robert. Look, I imagine you get a lot of calls from people on a regular basis. I am one of those people. I'm calling you as a cold call. Do you want to roll the dice or do you want to hang up now? Okay. I know that sounds really tacky and it probably feels a bit cringy, but it's been my experience that stuff like that actually does really work with people. If nothing else, you're calling out the elephant in the room and you're at least getting to a place where you're acknowledging what is obviously a frustration of particular customers. One thing I really like about this particular technique is that it gives a level of intrigue, right? If you think if you were on the receiving end of that call, you'd be able to volunteer 20 seconds. If nothing else, it would pique your interest. It's all about making it, you know, feel like it's delivered with confidence. It's all about being a bit jovial with it, a bit playful with it. One of the other things, though, and I understand this, you know, it's not just about getting through and then giving your pitch. It's probably that if they get prospected a lot, they probably take a lot of meetings as well. So some of the things I might try to use in my power script would be something like this when I'm asking for a meeting. Look, I understand you probably have a lot of people who want to spend some time with you, want to do uncovery meetings, want to come out and pitch their product. I've done a bit of research on you. I do actually think that there's an opportunity there for us to really do some work for you that could be quite powerful for your business. I'm certainly not going to waste your time, but I would definitely appreciate an opportunity if you'd indulge me. Let me bring a coffee out. Let me take 20 minutes just to run you through at a top line why I thought that we could potentially do some work together. And I'd love to maybe get a better understanding of whether that is relevant for you. If not, no problems at all. But I am going to be in the area next week anyway. I'm going to be there on Wednesday. Do you have 20 minutes for me at this time, Robert? Again, it's all about just going in, giving the information, kind of preempting any sort of friction, but really just asking for the meeting. Something that somebody told me a long time ago, which has always stuck with me when it comes to prospecting and particularly cold calling, A, you can be whoever you want on the phone, okay? At the end of the day, the goal of a cold call is to get a meeting, right? So if you care about your ego too much, you're going to miss the opportunity to get the meeting. When you go and conduct the face-to-face meeting, that's your opportunity to impress, right? That's your first true impression that you're going to give to that person. So don't be afraid to get a bit playful with the cold call. Worst case, you're going to get hung up on. Worst case, they're not going to be interested. You know, one piece of advice I would probably offer to this as a way of rounding this out, if the client is really, really, you know, strongly opposed to meeting, they don't want to catch up, don't be afraid to go in with a script like this. Hey, look, completely understand. Sounds like the timing might be off. It sounds like there may not be a need there. At some point, I would love to connect. Would you mind if I were to give you a call in another 3 months' time, or even if something comes across my desk that I think would be right and interesting for you, do I have your permission to give you a call and take you through what that is? Okay. You'd be surprised, actually, the response you get to that. Because when people say no to a meeting, you're then giving them a second request. You're almost asking for a compromise that isn't just a flat out awkward rejection. So I'm surprised, actually, a lot of the time people go, yeah, give us a call in a couple of months. Or, yeah, if something, you know, if there's a deal that comes across your table, oh, sure, I'd love to see it. The other thing that you can do here that I think can really get the meeting back on track, or can get the conversation back on track, is if you're prospecting into a particular category, use every unsuccessful cold call as a way of gathering intel. So, you know, the example of a roofing company is terrible, but let's just keep going with it. Let's say Robert from Robert's Roofing flat out doesn't want to have a meeting with us, not interested, doesn't need to advertise, gets reps calling all the time, doesn't want you to call him in 3 months. Okay, something that could be really powerful at the end of that is to go, no probs, sounds like you're crushing it over there. Good to hear your business is doing well. You know, I have to admit, I've not done much work in the roofing industry. I haven't worked with many clients there. You know, is the roofing market really hot right now, Robert? Like, are you generally getting a lot of inquiry through? Is it all going well? Why is that? What's driving that? Why are people renovating their homes? Is this a seasonal thing? Does this happen all year round, or are there parts of the year where you're really busy? Who are some of the big players in this space? What seems to be motivating people to go with you versus other people? What's the general sort of price range for getting your roof done, right? There's a reason you're asking those questions. One, you're going to gather amazing intel that you can incorporate into your next pitch, right? Imagine if you pick up the phone to the next roofing company, go, hey, it's Jamie. Look, I've been talking to a bunch of roofers. I know that typically your category really heats up in summer for obvious reasons. We're seeing a lot of people that are starting to inquire about this particular type of work just due to some weather that's been happening. Reason I want to speak to you specifically is I know that there's a lull after this period. It'd be great to see if we could actually put an offer to the market and drum up a bit of business during that quieter period, right? So your pitch becomes a lot sharper as you go through the calls. Now, this is, again, just me rambling. So you have to spend time refining this stuff. But I think really don't be afraid to work the phones. You know, it's one of my favorite things to sit and listen to is a rep who is really good at just sitting there and just using sheer brute force to get through a prospecting block. You know, learn to actually, I'm not going to say you're ever going to enjoy it. I always say cold calls are like burpees. You don't enjoy doing them, but you can't sort of argue with the results. You get amazing bang for buck and they get easier the more you do them. So, you know, that would be the thing that I would probably really encourage you to do here is lean into the fact that these clients get a lot of prospecting and figure out some angles to differentiate the way that you pitch. But I would be really, really encouraging you to just call out the elephant in the room. Acknowledge that it's a factor that they get over contacted and try to kind of use that as an advantage to really help differentiate your pitch.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey Jamie, I'm new to agency sales and my sales manager is always pushing me to go out and get briefs from my agencies. I feel really awkward just asking the clients to write me a brief when they say they don't have anything going on for me. Any advice for how to manage this?
Yeah, a couple of things there that I thought were interesting. One, if your sales leader is just telling you to go out and get briefs, that's probably something that needs to be addressed with the sales manager. I'm going to assume that their directive is to go out and really engage your agencies and get some visibility on what briefs are coming or have a conversation around what proactive opportunities you might be able to work on with that agency. So let's park that. In terms of asking a busy agency person to write you a brief, I totally get that. Right? I think that is actually a really awkward thing to do as well, right? Because effectively you're asking that person to just go and do more work so that you've got an opportunity to go and generate revenue. I think the positioning here, I want to be delicate, but there's probably two different ways I would approach this depending on the context. So let's say I'm just going to ask them if they're going to write me a brief. Here's how I do it. That sounds like a really exciting opportunity for us. I think we could really showcase some great thinking and do some great work there. Did you have plans to actually issue a brief to market? Is there any chance that we could get like a bit of a top line idea of the objectives and the timings that we could start to work to? Okay, so what that does is that uncovers whether there actually is a serious intention to brief that opportunity out to the market. And it's a very softly way of asking. Again, I probably said that in a little bit too a formal language, but you can hear just through my tone that it was kind of done with excitement and enthusiasm to work on it. let's say that you get a read that that person's completely slammed, they're really busy, the brief's going to come out when it comes out, and they just need you to leave them alone. I think this is actually a really interesting approach that you can take. Hey, this sounds like really interesting as an opportunity. Look, if you would indulge us, could we write a reverse brief for you that you could sign off on that we could then take and actually put a bit of a proactive proposal together for you guys? It'll be pretty top line, but if nothing else, it just allows us to kind of showcase what we think we could do to bring something to life for this brand. We are most happy to do it. So stop. So again, all very casual, all very relaxed, but it's just using that kind of language to go, I'd really like to take a brief today. I get the feeling you're busy. Would you indulge me and let us write you a reverse brief that you could review and sign off on? It's in the way you ask. Obviously, it's what you're asking for, which is really them just to read a document that you pre-write. I'm a massive fan of reverse briefs. I think they're like the most underutilized tool in agency sales. And effectively, you're really just asking for a commitment to read a document. You're completely, willing to do all the work. And what's important here is that you do use a phrase like this at the end. Look, there's going to be no obligation on your end, or, to review it or to put it in front of the client, unless you feel really compelled to do so. For our own benefit, we'd love to work on it. And with the benefit of a bit of time, I think it would be great to flesh out and explore some different areas, maybe before a real brief hits stop. So that, again, is something that I think just takes a lot of the pressure out of it, right? You don't have to volunteer that, but it might just be if you sense some reluctance from the client, or if you feel like they're trying to, you're kind of leading them down a corner they don't really want to go down. It's just very much about keeping it all very relaxed and very fluid. But that would be my recommendation, for how to tackle this particular one. If you have to have a conversation with your manager, I think that might be a separate discussion altogether. But for the sake of this one, that's how I would typically go out and really try to extract some briefing opportunities from the market.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey, Jamie, I work in radio sales and have a very strained relationship with the content director of the station. He's very focused on ratings, but with clients asking for more and more integration, I'm sensing that he's starting to put up some walls and in many cases doesn't even want to hear me out anymore. How do I get this fixed?
Yeah, this is one I am very familiar with, and it's not uncommon. The biggest thing here is, probably delineating between, do you want to have a conversation around the dynamic you're sensing, or do you just want to know how to approach a conversation around a client integrated brief? Maybe I'll try and think about two different approaches. So let's say there's a bit of tension. You feel like the last couple of conversations you've had around client integration opportunities hasn't gone well, and you're just feeling like the content director isn't really a fan of yours. Here's how I'd probably open that convo. So I'd say something like, hey, I just wanted to grab a couple of minutes with you just to clear the air. I could definitely sense some frustrations on the last few briefs. And I absolutely appreciate how frustrating that must have been for you. I know the pressure on ratings. From my end, I'm sure you can probably understand the pressure on revenue is substantial as well. But I don't want you to ever feel like there's a gun to your head. And I certainly don't want it to feel like we have to come at this from an adversarial perspective moving forward. I'd feel terrible. I love the station. I love listening to it. The last thing I want to do is ruin the listener experience or do anything to compromise our rating strength. Just want to make sure that everything's okay. Just want to make sure that, moving forward, if there's a different way we need to approach this stuff, that you just let me know. So stop. Okay. So, that's, again, not the most polished thing in the world, but that's the beauty of it, right? That's probably how I would have that conversation. Try to lead with a bit of empathy. Try to deal with it now that the heat's off, do it almost as a retrospective thing. Acknowledge that maybe some of the tension is really not interpersonal or personal. It's to do with two different types of pressure, both kind of coming to a head. So that's how I'd probably try to take a bit of the heat out. And very rarely, unless somebody's really felt quite burnt, very rarely is anyone going to respond negatively to that type of, that type of approach, at least not in my experience. Now, let's say, though, that you do have a tricky brief. You've got like a high-stakes opportunity. It's going to require the content team to maybe subvert some of their, you know, some of that winning formula or some of that content strategy, but it is a critical piece of business. I think, you know, the first thing I'd say is socialize it before the brief lands. So I do something like this, you know, hey, I just wanted to give you a bit of a heads up. There is an opportunity that is coming down the pipe, pretty big upside in revenue. I won't lie, you're not going to love what the client's asking us to do or the some of the things that they're probably requiring from a content perspective. It's a bit tricky. I'd love your help on just figuring out how we kind of navigate this one. There's definitely an opportunity there. I just think we have to collaborate a bit around a way to make it work. And here's what the upside is. It does have actually quite a bit of revenue against it. And maybe there's a way that we could actually leverage this for a bit of promotional value. Okay, stop. So what that's really doing is it's trying to kind of get it to them before they receive the brief or receive the request officially. It's giving them a bit of respect. It's giving them a heads up. It's letting them know that you want to collaborate. It's letting them know that you need their help to work through it, right? And I think in many ways, what it sort of does is it, if nothing else, it just warns them that this next thing is coming down the pipe. Let's say then we get into the room and we've got a really difficult kind of request coming from the client. What I would typically do is try with a script like this. Okay, so yeah, no doubt you've had a chance to read this. It looks pretty rough. I guess, you know, if I could just articulate what I think success looks like. Obviously, we need to get to a situation. We would like to get to a situation where we can secure this revenue, but in doing so, we can kind of preserve and protect the integrity of our on-air product. Like if we can achieve that goal, would that be a good outcome for both of us? That even sounds a bit sort of scripted and a bit salesy, but that's probably how I would attack it. I would try to kind of get consensus on, we both actually have the same goal. It's just how we get there. That is probably where things are going to be a bit difficult. I think those two things initially are worth having a try. If this particular content director is really feeling a lot of pressure, you might go into this next level, which is something like this. You know, hey, you know, can we actually go off site for a quick coffee? I really want to get ahead of the next 3 to 5 months of the market being quite difficult. I want to get an understanding of what's important to you, what things you really need from the sales team in order to, you know, to be able to kind of have the best possible product on air. And I just want to get an understanding of what your world is at the moment. Stop. So again, sometimes maybe that's easier kind of sales leader to content director than maybe someone who's a frontline seller. But I think just always try to lean in with empathy, try to lean in with the goal of getting a better understanding of their challenges, their world. And I think a big one is like, find the ways to build political capital with these people, right? If you're just constantly going into that relationship, asking for concessions, asking for favors, asking them to bend the rules, and you're not going in and actively trying to find a way to invest in that relationship. Hey, can I get you pricing? Hey, is there a way that we can attract a sponsor for something that you need to fund it properly? Hey, you know, we've got some great product to give away from this client. Would that be beneficial if you used it? Hey, do you want to come to lunch with the breakfast team at one of our Contra restaurants? Do you want to take your team out to lunch on us? Okay, all of those things are really important with that dynamic between content and sales. And I think the more you can approach that relationship of how do I add value to this person and how do I try to work collaboratively when I can, the more likely you're going to have that kind of social currency to draw from when you need to.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey, Jamie, got any tips for how to break bad news to a client? I feel like I'm constantly disappointing my clients with bad news, but it seems so natural for other people in the team to do this and preserve their relationship.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this one, I don't think it ever gets any easier to break bad news to a client. The reality is issues happen, right? Delivery issues happen. Clients miss out on opportunities. Prices go up. Just any raft of things happen that cause a media salesperson to have to pick up the phone and have a bit of a yucky conversation. If you feel like you're constantly disappointing your clients with bad news, I'd say that might be something to address. You know, maybe there is a process issue or a delivery issue or something kind of systemic. But if it's just about going, you know, my team seem to be a little bit better at picking up the phone and having difficult conversations and delivering bad news than I do, this is my approach usually to delivering bad news, particularly if it's a bit of a doozy of an issue, is I'll typically pick it up with something like this, you know, hey, look, just need to give you probably some bad news. This is actually really embarrassing on my behalf, and I'm really sorry to be delivering this to you. We've actually had a pretty, I'm not going to say major, but we've had an issue in the delivery of the campaign. I've been brought across it. Effectively, this thing didn't happen. The reason it didn't happen, we're not aware of. I'm currently looking into, but be rest assured, it's all been sorted, so nothing else is going wrong. I've been able to negotiate a bit of a resolution, but I still just need to collect some more information. So I just wanted to get that on your radar. Nothing to do just yet. I'm going to contact you back in 2 hours with an update. And then we can decide on how we best proceed to get this resolved. Stop. Like, obviously it's difficult when I don't have a real scenario, but that kind of approach is how I find you'd want to communicate. So it's going in and just kind of calling it out straight away. It's humbling yourself a little bit, like saying, look, this is actually really embarrassing. I'm really sorry for this. Giving them a status update on, you know, what the issue specifically is, allaying any concerns that it has been addressed and won't continue, and then obviously giving them a timeline to then come back and resolve the issue. That's sort of the way that I would do it. You know, in certain sales contexts, it can be difficult, right? So maybe there was, you know, a really great idea that you sold to a client and suddenly you can't get the talent that you pitched to them, or suddenly, you know, what was approved to be sold isn't approved anymore and you've had to renege on an offering or something like that. I would say have all your ducks in a row, but again, it's about delivering it in a way that is just truthful and pragmatic. And don't be afraid to kind of, some people say to play it down. I'm the opposite. Like, actually play it up a bit before you deliver the news so that people are sort of relieved to hear it, right? And I'll give you an example. Hey, you're going to think I am an absolute idiot when I tell you what's just happened. You're going to be very disappointed with me. Unfortunately, the talent that we pitched for that idea has just told us they've got a conflict. It was unbeknownst to us when we pitched. We've just found out that they can't actually do that date, and their manager said that they can't work with you. I'm really sorry. I know you had your hopes up on this. All's not lost. Here's what we're doing. We're sourcing other talent. We've actually got a couple of really great plan Bs. We kind of went in forecasting that we may have some issues because we've, as you know, with talent, it's always a bit of a crapshoot, a bit of a roll of the dice. So we're going to work through that, give you some options. But I'm just going to put this to you in writing now, just so you're across it. I'm really sorry if this has caused any embarrassment or got the client's hopes up though. Stop. So that's sort of how I would do that, right? Again, it's calling it out, anchoring it with like, you're going to think I'm an idiot at the end of this. I've done a really, you know, I've had a horrible, horrible mess up. Suddenly like, oh, the talent's not available. It doesn't sound so bad. So to me, that's kind of how I would do it. I think the biggest thing with all of this is, you know, these things happen, right? And I think sometimes it's just really thinking about how do you like to receive bad news? Usually you like people to just rip the bandage off. You like people to give you all the information. You like people to acknowledge your feelings and not gloss over them. But for the most part, people understand these things happen. So I would just really encourage you to think about this as, you know, not going in going, I've got to disappoint my clients. You naturally just have to communicate these things as they arise. This is part of what the role is. Best of luck with that one.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
My sales manager keeps hassling me to get an update on some business that's been sitting in my pipeline. Every time I call the agency, they say it's with the client and they'll let me know. I'm sensing I'm starting to annoy them.
Yeah, this one's pretty common. You know, sometimes you've got to be delicate here. Sometimes things just genuinely take time and there's nothing you can do to influence the outcome but just let it sit in the pipeline. And sometimes you actually need to ask a tactical question that really flushes out if this thing is going to happen. So let me give you two scenarios, both of which I think are probably the way I would tackle this, which is there's been like a big piece of business you've responded to, you were supposed to hear back, You've followed up multiple times and you're just not getting a lot of detail. I'd probably go with something like this. Hey, look, I know I've been calling a lot, asking for an update on this one. You know, you've sort of said it's still with the client. I just want to give you context as to why I have to keep kind of asking you. Like, every week we do a bit of a weekly forecast meeting. This is a pretty substantial piece of business. So it's just, it's in the system. Obviously, it links to our forecast and I just need to provide that regular update. So, you know, it's not me being overeager. I understand there's a process to work through, but I just have, you know, I've committed to that weekly reporting cycle and I just need to provide that status update. I'm assuming maybe nothing's moved since last week. Okay. Look, what I might do is I might just sort of update my boss that we're not going to potentially hear anything for a period of time. Like, when do you anticipate you're going to get an update from the client? Okay, if it's 3 weeks, let me do this. Let me tell my boss that we're not really going to hear anything material for 3 weeks. Out of interest, you know, I'm just mindful we initially said that this was going to be decided a couple of weeks ago. Has something sort of changed from the client's end? Like, is there anything material that might be impacting this, you know, this campaign's likelihood to progress? Or is it just them taking, you know, taking their time to review the process? It's no, it's okay either way. I guess I'm just, you know, we're just usually mindful that when things sit in pending for 60 days plus, that they're actually very unlikely to go ahead. So I just thought I would ask the question. Okay, great to know. So stop. I think that's how I would typically approach that with the agency, right? It's very fair to ask for an update on a response that you spent time crafting, particularly if there was an initial feedback date or a timeline that the agency communicated that they're now not meeting. Really giving an understanding as to why you're following up is so important, and giving an understanding as to the frequency with which you have to follow up. So often I think people are surprised that a lot of agencies don't realize we commit to these weekly pipeline meetings, we commit to weekly forecasts, and we have to report back on this information. So don't be afraid to give that context as to the reason why you're following up. Here's the other script though, and this one is probably something that I think would be, I would say use it sparingly, but sometimes if you just need to get an answer, use something like this. Hey, I just wanted to follow up on, you know, maybe one last time on that piece of business. I'm just conscious we responded to that a number of weeks ago. At the time, it seemed like it was all looking pretty positive, but it's sort of been sitting and pending for quite a while now. It's at the point where I'd probably be reluctant to keep it in my forecast, if I'm honest. It just, with every passing week, it just feels like the likelihood that this is going to proceed might be getting a bit lower. Would you suggest that it's something that we maybe take out and don't count on moving forward? Like, from your end, I just want to get a sense on what's your gut feel. Is this potentially going to proceed, or has it maybe been a change of direction from the client's end? So that is going to do one or two things. Look, yeah, Jamie, take it out. Honestly, I don't know what they're doing. It's like it's been dragged. We're not even getting information on our end. Okay, that sucks, but at least you're dealing with the reality, right? Or conversely, no, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's all good. This is just the things that are slowing it up, okay? So I think those two things are probably the things I'd suggest. I do acknowledge, though, that, you know, it can be frustrating constantly having to provide updates when you don't have them. I think, you know, in order to mitigate that risk, don't be afraid to maybe set the intention when you do the follow-up. So if it was something to the effect of like, any updates? Oh, look, no updates yet. Okay, would you recommend I maybe call you? You know, I normally have to do a weekly update to the business. Would you recommend I call you before next week, or do we leave it for a couple of weeks and I'll hear from you? So if you do that, then what that at least does is it allows you to go back to your manager and go, oh, look, they're not going to have an update for us for another 2 weeks. I'm going to diarize to follow them up before that. Best of luck with that one. I know that one is one of the more awkward things to do, and you definitely don't want to be a pest.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey, Jamie, got any advice for managing people with terrible email manner? There's a member of our production team that always sends snarky, sarcastic, and short emails to me with my manager and other members of the team CC'd in. It's definitely getting to the point where I need to address it, but I want to address it directly rather than complaining to my boss, as that didn't work last time and actually made him worse.
Yeah, unfortunately, this one is very common. I think the first thing that's worth calling out is be absolutely certain that this person's email tone and manner is intended to be rude, abrupt, and sarcastic. There's so many examples of people who have a very dry, very tongue-in-cheek sense of humor where the tonality is not inferred and people perceive it as being hostile when it actually isn't. But it seems to me like this is a genuine case. There's a couple of things I would do here. When I'm on the end of a fairly curt email, or a rude or sarcastic email, the first thing I'll do, to be really honest, is ignore it. Okay. And I know that sounds like a weird thing to say, but if somebody sends something that's designed to provoke or is designed to almost elicit a similar response, you don't have to engage in that. Okay. These keyboard warriors kind of thrive on having the keyboard battles. You just not engaging or ignoring it, if there's a pertinent piece of information they're requesting and maybe at the end they put a bit of a snarky remark, just go back and play it with a straight bat. Just reply as if it's normal business communication. That's usually the first approach, because what it kind of demonstrates is I'm not going to engage in this. I'm not somebody that you can elicit reaction out of. And whilst it would be great to go back and put them in their place, a couple of times doing this, typically that will actually make that person realize that you're not someone who's going to even acknowledge that that kind of attitude is acceptable in an email. One of the other things that is worth doing, and this one's awkward, but it would be picking up the phone to the person off the back of that email and saying something like this: "Hey, seems like you're frustrated." Just a general sign off in the email. I can sense a bit of a tone. Am I being paranoid here, or is there a concern you want to raise? So stop. So you can kind of see what I'm doing with that technique. One, I'm taking it off email and I'm going directly to the person. People are a lot less scary in person, at least most of the time. You're calling out that you can sense there's some frustrations, right? And you're kind of putting the ball in that person's court. I'm going to tackle this behavior head on. What exactly is the problem? Many times I've found this technique to be really successful because it does two things. It takes the communication off an email trail, which is sort of like a semi-public forum with multiple people reading, and it goes directly to the person that you have the issue with, but it comes at it from a place of empathy. I can sense there are some frustrations. Tell me if I'm being paranoid in the way I'm interpreting your communication, but this is how it reads to me. Is that how it's intended? If so, what is the issue that's causing that? Right? This is a really effective way to kind of stamp this out and let that person know that you're onto them. The third technique, if this is a continued repeated pattern of behavior, would be to do something to the effect of this, right? And again, I'm mindful that I'm freestyling a lot of this tonight, but I would do something to the effect of picking up the phone and or sending an email reply back to the person directly. So taking everybody off the CC line and saying something to the effect of, "Seems to me that you've got an issue that you wish to address. I don't appreciate the tone in the email. Full stop. Please give me a call so we can discuss. Full stop." Right? Simple as that. Or conversely, if you do feel like you've been disrespected and you want to show that you're addressing it, something to the effect of a reply or with, "Hi, person. Seems like we have our wires crossed here and there's an issue to address. I'm going to give you a call shortly to discuss." Full stop. Right? Two different ways to do it. Again, I think it's really important with these types of things. People who are really, have terrible email manner and are rude and curt and sarcastic and narky in emails, 9 times out of 10 are not that way when you call them directly. Right? So I would say just, I know it's tempting, right? And I've had many times in my career where I've sent emails back to somebody that I regret 5 minutes later. In the heat of the moment, that type of thing can be something I probably still do even all these days, all these years later. But I would say those are the kind of phrases you want to use. It's unemotional language. It's showing that you don't appreciate or tolerate it. You don't think it's courteous, respectful, but that's how I do it. the last thing I would suggest, if you've tried all of these things and you're not getting a solution, is you would get a piece of email communication, like an email chain, where the, you know, there might be a bit of a pattern of communication there. And I would encourage you to just forward that to a superior in your business. And I would write something to the effect of, hey, I just wanted to get you across some of this communication. I'm not going to say anything, but I'd love you to review the below and give me your perspective on if you think this communication style is appropriate. Right? Maybe even something to the effect of, hey, would you mind reviewing the below? I'd just love to get your thoughts and feedback on this. Right? That is a very, very non-accusatory way of saying, let me know if I'm being paranoid here or if this is genuinely an unacceptable way to behave or to communicate. But what you're doing is you're not necessarily inferring that that's the issue. I find that can be really powerful. I know as a sales director, in the past, I've had people actually get me over correspondence in that way of just going, hey, can you just review this for me without any other context? And usually through the course of that, I would be, you know, I'd be quite appalled with some of the stuff I was reading and would be sort of duty bound to address that behavior from that individual. So, you know, there's really no fear of retribution with this. If somebody's just being inappropriate in the workplace, try and tackle with them directly. Try and sort of do it in a way that's diplomatic and fair. Give it a couple of goes. But if it's a repeated pattern of behavior, if it's not okay, don't be afraid to escalate it, because these, you know, fortunately, the thing about putting this kind of stuff in writing is it's in writing. You've got documented proof. Very best of luck with that one, though. I know that one is particularly tricky.
Media Sales Mastery.
That was it for this fortnight's episode. We've got some really exciting episodes coming up for future. You've got some really exciting guests from all over the world, actually, which is really cool. It's one of the beauties of my new role at Boost Media International is getting to deal with different sales leaders from different countries. You know, just this week alone, I've spoke to people from New Zealand, Sri Lanka, Canada, a little bit in South Africa, and then obviously beautiful Australia as well. So one of the things I'm also probably just getting on the radar is that at some point pretty soon, I am going to look to kind of just slowly start to adapt the format of the podcast and maybe the content. I'm thinking I'm just going to try and do something different to refresh it after 4 years. So if you have any thoughts or suggestions on some different things you'd like to hear, some different topics, maybe some topics you'd like me to revisit, some guests you'd like me to get back on, anything that you're wanting for, just hit me up in LinkedIn. My LinkedIn is in the show notes. Connect with me. Reach out, let me know. I love hearing from people who support the podcast. So don't ever be afraid to give me a suggestion or some thoughts or feedback. Other than that, I know it's a tough market out there. Things are pretty soft, but just continue forging ahead. And I will talk to you all very soon.